Dottie Dimple at Home. Chapter 1. The Lion and the Lamb. Dottie Dimple, after a night of pleasant sleep, greeted herself in the morning with a groan. It was as if she had said, "Oh, dear. You here again, Dottie? Why didn't you sleep longer?" Prudy noticed the cloud on her sister's face in a moment. She saw she had waked up wrong. "Now I have never told you how peculiarly trying it was to live with Dottie Dimple. She seemed to have, at the same time, the nature of a lion and a lamb. When the lion raged, then her eyes blazed, and she looked as if she belonged in a menagerie, but when nothing occurred to rouse her wild temper, she was as gentle and tender as a little lamb frisking by its mother's side on a summer's day. Indeed, if I were to describe the loveliness of her manners, and the sweetness of her face, I ought to dip my pen in liquid sunshine, whereas, the blackest of ink would not be at all too dark to draw her picture when she was out of temper. In her earliest childhood it had been worse than it was now. Then she had not tried in the least to control herself, and the lion had had his own way. After one of her wild outbursts, she would follow her mother about the house, saying, in a soft, pleading voice, "Say, Mama, is I your little comfort?" Before answering Dottie, the poor mother had to call to mind all the good things the child had ever said or done, and fancy how dreadful it would be to lose her. Then she would reply, "Yes, Dottie, you are Mama's dear little girl, but Mama doesn't like your naughty, naughty ways." This failed to satisfy Miss Dimple. She would cry out again, in heartbroken tones, "Is I your little comfort, Mama? Is I?" So, sooner or later, Mrs. Parlin was obliged, for the sake of peace, to kiss the child, and answer, "Yes." Then, perhaps, for 24 hours the lion would be curled up, asleep, and out of sight in his den, and the lamb would be playfully frisking about the house, a pet for everybody. But often and often, when Susie and Prudy came in from school or a play, they found their baby sister in disgrace, perched upon the wood box in the kitchen, with feet and hands firmly tied. There she would sit, throwing out the loudest noise possible from her little throat. It was the young lion again, roaring in his cage. Prudy, though her heart swelled with pity, dared not say, "Don't scream so, little sister. Please don't pound so with your feet." For when the lion fits were on, it was always safest to let the unhappy child alone. Prudy, who had no more temper than a hummingbird, and Susie, who was only moderately fretful once in a while, were made very unhappy by Dottie's dreadful behavior. At such times as I describe, they even looked guilty, and cast down their eyes, for they could not help feeling their sister's conduct as a family disgrace. They never spoke to anyone about it, and bore all her freaks with wonderful patience. When the little one plucked at their hair or ears, they said, pitifully, "It's worse for her than it is for us. It makes her throat so sore to scream so." They were especially careful never to provoke her to wrath. Perhaps, for the sake of peace, they yielded to her too much. If there was anything Dottie dearly loved, it was her own way, and the thing she most heartily despised was giving up. At the time of which we now write she was no longer a mere baby, and her reasons, as Prudy had said, were beginning to grow. She was never placed on the wood box now, with hands and feet tied, and as for pulling hair, she was ashamed of the practice. On this particular morning she had waked up wrong. You all know what that means. Perhaps her dream stopped in the most interesting place, or perhaps some of the wonderful machinery of her body was out of order, and caused a twitching of the delicate nerves which lie under the skin. At any rate, when the cloudy sun peeped through the white curtains of Dottie's pleasant chamber, he found that little lady out of sorts. "There, now, how long have you been awake, Prudy? Why didn't you speak?" "Oh, it isn't anywhere near breakfast time, Dottie, nor hasn't ground the coffee yet." "Then I should think she might. She knows I'm hungry, and that makes her be as slow as a bored nail. I'll tell you what I wish, Prudy. I wish the whole world was enormous clingstone peach, so I could keep eating for always, and never come to the stone." "I don't know," replied Prudy, pleasantly. "I believe I'd rather have it a Bartlett pear, dead ripe." "H.M. You may have your old Bartlett pears, Prudy Parlin, nobody wants them but just you. The next sweet, juicy peach that comes into this house I'll eat it myself, 'cause you don't like peaches, you just said you didn't." Prudy was considerate enough to make no reply. By living with Dottie, she had learned many lessons in holding her peace. "Perhaps we'd better get up," suggested she, rubbing her eyes. Whereupon Dottie pursed her little red lips. "Let's play keep house," answered she, for the sake of being cross-grained. "Well, I don't care much," said Prudy, anxious to keep the peace. They proceeded to make a tent of the upper sheet, and converse upon the trials of this troublesome life, as Mr. and Mrs. Carter, the two heads of a family. "There's our Sammy," said Prudy, dolefully, "our poor Sammy. I don't see, Mrs. Carter, what we shall do with that boy. Within a day or two he has taken to stealing acorns."
"Acorns?" responded Dotty, in a tragic tone.
"Oh, Mr. Carter, I suggest the best thing we can do is to stand him up in the sink, and pump water on him."
"I never thought of that, my dear wife. You are probably correct.
Probably correct.
But what course shall we pursue with Marianne, and Julia Ann, and Anna Maria? They all bite their fingernails, bite him down to the double quick.
I would suggest, why don't you give those children some proxetute of iron, my dear, through a knitting needle?
Hark!" continued she, as Prudy scratched the top of the tent with her forefinger. "There's a mouse in this house, Mr. Carter, you must set a trap as quick as you can spring."
"Very correct," replied the obedient husband, "very correct, Mrs. Carter. I'll call Jerusha to toast some cheese."
"Jerusha?
What do you mean by Jerusha, Mr. Carter? We haven't any in the house."
"Oh, she is our chambermaid, my dear.
But I won't allow her to be Jerusha, Mr. Carter."
"But, my dear wife, Jerusha is a proper name, it belongs to her."
"No, it isn't a proper name either, it's a very improper name, Prudy Parlin, and if you call her Jerusha so, I'll get us both disvosed."
Prudy saw it was useless to continue the game. Dotty was not in a mood to be satisfied. The two children arose and dressed themselves, Prudy taking peculiar care not to finish her own toilet first.
"I'm going to tell you something," said Dotty, grimly, "but you mustn't tell Mama. I've made up my mind to be naughty."
"To be naughty?"
"Yes, that's what I said, naughty. I'm tired all out of being good. First thing I thought was, I'd be bad all day. I wanted to fret, and I'm going to fret."
"Oh, do outie. Dotty de play.
You needn't say anything, Prudy Parlin. You can talk as grand as a whale. But if I want to go and be naughty, you can't help yourself."
Prudy's face took on a look of real distress. What this little queer mixture of a girl might do, if she really chose to be naughty, it was not pleasant to fancy. The two went downstairs together. As they entered the cheerful dining room, the joyous son burst into a round smile, as if he had thrown off his yesterday's vapors, and never meant to be low-spirited again. But Dotty looked foggier than ever. It was a delightful room. The wallpaper was the color of rich cream, the pictures were beautiful, the table, with its snowy cloth and white dishes, was pleasant to the eye. Still, it was not so much the objects to be seen as it was the air of the room which made it seem so delightful. You knew at once, as you looked at the people who gathered around the table that morning, that they all loved one another, and family love makes any house seem like home. Grandma Reed was there in her plain Quaker cap, with the nicely starched kerchief crossed upon her bosom, Mr. Parlin in his drab dressing gown, lined with crimson, Mrs. Parlin in a print wrapper, with a linen collar at the throat, her hair as smooth as satin, the three little girls all neatly dressed, and all happy but Dotty. Susie's mockingbird hung in a cage by one of the windows, and Brother Zip was lounging in an armchair, catching flies. After everybody was comfortably seated, and had said good morning, then a silent blessing, according to the custom of the friends, was asked upon the food. All sat with folded hands, and eyes reverently fixed upon their plates. Dotty knew very well they were asking to be made thankful for the excellent breakfast before them. She repeated to herself several times the sentence she had been taught, for, in spite of her intention to be naughty, she dared not omit it. When Mr. Parlin began to pass the butter, she was still looking at her plate, and startled the whole family by saying aloud, "Amen." Grandma looked at the little girl with surprise and disapproval. Dotty blushed painfully. She had not meant to be irreverent. Next moment she thought, "Now they all suppose I did that to purpose. I don't care if they do. I'll act worse than that. I wonder what my father'd say if I should jump right up and down, and scream?" It certainly was not safe to try the experiment. Dotty contented herself by scowling at her dry toast. But after her father had gone away to his business, and her mother had begun to make preserves in the kitchen, she went down cellar, into the washroom, and began to tease Nora. Nora, who was fond of the child, and in general very good-natured, was not in a mood this morning to be trifled with. "Indeed, Mississippi Flippet," said she, indignantly, "I shall put up with no more of your pranks. It's not your sister Prudy who would go to hide in my soap, and me in a hurry. She likes Prudy best. I always knew she did, and everybody else," thought Dotty, wrathfully, "everybody else but me. and the temper which had been smoldering all the morning blazed up hotly. "Call me Miss Flippet again, if you dare," cried she, with battle fires in her eyes. "What you suppose the mayor'll do to you, miss? He'll put you in a lockup, yes, he will." At this foolish speech Nora's mouth assumed a mocking smile, which added live coals to Dottie's wrath. "You miserable Catholic girl. You. Words were choked in the smoke and flame of her anger. "I mean to say the dreadful lion, which had not come out in his full strength for years, suddenly sprang up, and shook his mane." Dottie could not speak. She lost her reason. Her head was on fire. Her hands and feet began to fly out. She danced up and down. Her terrific screams brought her mother down in haste, to see what was the matter. Dottie's face was crimson, her eyes shining fiercely, her voice hoarse from screaming. "Indeed, ma'am," said Nora, really alarmed, "I've no means of knowing what's put her in such a way, ma'am." "She called me everything," cried Dottie, getting her voice again. "I was Miss Flippet. I was all the wicked girls in this town." Nora looked a little mortified. She knew her mistress was very particular, and did not allow anyone in her house to call names. But just now Mrs. Parlin had no time to give Nora a mild reproof, her whole attention being devoted to the half-insane Dottie, whose most unusual exhibition of temper filled her with dreadful apprehensions. "Alas," thought the good mother, "is this child going to live over again those dreadful days of her babyhood? The Lord give me wisdom to know what to do with her." Mrs. Parlin soon succeeded in quieting the turbulent Dottie, and deep silence fell upon the washroom. "My dear little girl," said she, very gently, "I desire you to spend the rest of the morning alone. You need not talk or play with either of your sisters. You may think. When the bell rings you may come to dinner, and after dinner I would like to see you in the nursery." In half an hour Dottie had such a look of heartache in her face that Prudy longed to comfort her, only speech was forbidden. The little creature was out in the front yard, poking dirt with a stick, and secretly wondering if she could make a hole deep enough to lie down in and die. Chapter 2. A Sad Story. After dinner, Mrs. Parlin was seated on the lounge in the nursery, looking very sad. Raising her eyes, she saw Dottie standing before her, twisting the corner of her apron. The child had entered as quietly as her own shadow, and her mother had not heard a footfall. "My dear little girl, I am going to tell you a story." "Yes, M." Dottie looked steadily at her fingernails. "A true story about a child who let her temper run away with her." "Yes, M," replied Dottie again, giving her mother a view of her rosy right ear. Mrs. Parlin saw that Dottie was very much ashamed. Her face did not look as it had looked in the early morning. Then, there was a hardness in her eye, there was a hardness in her cheek. Now she appeared as if she would be very much obliged to the nursery floor if it would open like a trapdoor and let her fall through, out of everybody's sight. "The little girl I am going to tell you about, Dottie, lived in this state. Her name was Harriet Snow. Her father and mother were both dead. She had occasional fits of temper, which were very dreadful indeed. At such times she would hop up and down and scream." Dottie tied the two corners of her apron into a hard knot. The story was rather too personal. "Was the little girl pretty?" said she, trying to change the subject. "Not very pretty, I think. Her skin was dark, her eyes were black, and remarkably bright. When I saw her, she was 13 years old, and you may know, Dottie, that by that time her face could not well be very pleasant. Temper always leaves its marks." Dottie looked at her little plump hands, as if she expected to see black spots on them. Sometimes Harriet beat her head against the wall so violently that there seemed to be danger of her dashing her brains out. Dottie looked up quite bravely. This dreadful little girl was worse than she had ever been. "Oh, yes. Wasn't she crazy, Mama?" Mrs. Parlin shook her head. "No, I'm afraid not, dear. Only, when she allowed anger to stay in her heart, it made her feel blind and dizzy. Perhaps she was crazy for the time." Dottie hung her head again. She remembered how blind and dizzy she herself had felt while screaming at Nora that morning. This little girl had no mother to warn her against indulging her temper. When she had the feeling of hate swelling at her heart, nobody told her what it was like. "You know what it is like, Dottie?" Dottie's chin drooped, and rested in the hollow of her neck. "I don't want to tell you, Mama." "Like murder, my child." Dottie shuddered, though she had known this before. Her mother had often read to her from the Bible, that whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. Well, there was no one to love this poor Harriet, she was not lovable. "No, M, she was hateable," remarked Dottie, anxious to say something, for if she held her peace, she was afraid her mother would think she was applying the story to herself. There was no one to love her, so a woman took her, and was paid for it by the town.
Town? Town, mama? A town is houses.
She was paid for it by men in the town. I don't know whether this woman tried to teach Harriet in the right way or not. It may be she had so much to do that she thought it less trouble to punish her when she was naughty than to instruct her how to be good.
Oh, yes, I suppose she struck her with a stick, said Dotty, patting her four fingers together, just this way.
Harriet had the care of one of Mrs. Gray's children, a lively little boy about 2 years old.
Was he cunning? As cunning as Katie Clifford? Did he say, "If you love me, you give me $100, and I go buy me tick a canny?"
Very likely he was quite as cunning as Katie. You would hardly think anyone could get out of patience with such a little creature, would you, my daughter?
No, indeed, cried Dotty, eagerly, and feeling that she was on safe ground, for she loved babies dearly, and was always patient with them.
I don't know but Harriet was envious of Mrs. Gray's little boy, because he had nicer things to eat than she had.
Well, it ought to have nicer things, Mama, 'cause it hadn't any teeth.
And she got tired of running after him.
No matter if she did get tired, Mama, the baby was tireder than she was.
And the parents think now it is very likely she was in the habit of striking him when nobody knew it.
What a naughty, wicked, awful girl! Cried Dotty, her eyes flashing.
She had a fiery temper, my child, and had never learned to control it.
Dotty looked at her feet in silence.
The baby was afraid of his little nurse, but he could not speak to tell how he was abused. All he could do was to cry when he was left with Harriet. But one day Mrs. Gray was obliged to go away to see her sick mother. She charged Harriet to take good care of little Freddy, and give him some baked apples and milk if he was hungry.
With bread in? Suggested Dotty.
Yes, I suppose so. Then she kissed her baby. He put his arms around her neck, and cried to go too, but she could not take him.
I suppose he cried 'cause he expected that awful girl was a-going to shake him, said Dotty, indignantly.
I cannot tell you precisely what Harriet did to him, but when the father and mother got home, that darling boy was moaning in great pain. They sent for the doctor, who said his spine was injured, and perhaps he would never walk again, and, indeed, he never did.
Oh, Mama. Mama Parlin.
Yes, my child, and it is supposed that Harriet must have hurt him in one of her fits of rage.
Dottie's face had grown very white.
Oh, Mama, what did the